So I'm going to read from Gospel of John. It's from chapter 11. Now, a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sisters sent word to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is sick." When he heard this, Jesus said, "This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. Yet when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. Then he said to his disciples, "Let us go back to Judea." "But Rabbi," they said, "a short while ago the Jews tried to stone you, and yet you're going back there?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours of daylight? A man who walks by day will not stumble, for he sees by this world's light. It is when he walks by night that he stumbles, for he has no light." After he had said this, he went on to tell them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I'm going there to wake him up." His disciples replied, "Lord, if he sleeps, he will get better." Jesus had been speaking of his death, but his disciples thought he meant natural sleep. So then he told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead, and for your sake I'm glad I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him." Then Thomas, called Didymus, said to the rest of the disciples, "Let us also go, that we may die with him." On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, he went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. "Lord," Martha said to Jesus, "if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha answered, "I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live even though he dies, and whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?" "Yes, Lord," she told him. "I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who was to come into the world." And after she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. "The teacher is here," she said, "and is asking for you." When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet entered the village where Martha had met him. When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house, comforting her, noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Come and see, Lord," they replied. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. "Take away the stone," he said. "But Lord," said Martha, the sister of the dead man, "by this time there is a bad odor, for he's been there 4 days." Then Jesus said, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, "Lazarus, "Come out." The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, "Take off the grave clothes and let him go." "Everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this?" Show of hands. "Everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this?" Okay. The only one who didn't put their hands up, I'm going to embarrass her, is Izzy. I don't think that means that she doesn't believe. I think it means she wasn't paying attention. That's okay. So, none of you are going to die. Or you are going to die. You're not going to die. Are we sure? It's an interesting one, isn't it? When you get into it a little bit. Jesus is a very challenging statement. "Everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this?" If I was to ask you, we had a pretty good showing in this church, which is very encouraging. I'm sure Pastor Steve will be very pleased. But if I was to ask you, a poll was done in 2002 of Christians and asked them this question, "Do you believe in life after death?" What percentage would you say of Christians would believe in life after death? Any guesses? 10%. Dreadfully pessimistic. 55. Still low. 90 is higher. Yeah? Okay. I'll put you out of your misery. 31% of Christians said they do not believe in life after death. 3 out of 10. Baffling. I'd get to give you another question. Of the Anglican ministers who were asked in this survey whether they believed in the physical resurrection of Jesus, what percentage would you say said that they do? 75. Ministers, 75% of ministers. Is that good or is that 60? 60% you think do? Rishi, why do you think it's lower? Have you heard of this survey already?
No?
Okay, so Rishi's saying that we believe in the resurrection as an abstract, which communicates something to us about our perhaps not necessarily physical immortality. Right. So we're happy to believe in a spiritual immortality, but not so much in a physical immortality. Only 30% of Anglican ministers said they believed in the physical resurrection of Jesus. 30% of ministers said that they believed in the physical resurrection of Jesus. What do you think the Apostle Paul would have said to them? Do you think the Apostle Paul would have said, "If Christ is not risen, your faith is futile, you are still in your sins"? What does that say? No, they don't, clearly don't believe Paul. No. Well, there you go. So, let's just look at this subject of immortality a little bit. I am going to talk about the scriptures a little bit, but I do want to look at this subject of immortality. Some of you may know this, that there's a chap called Ray Kurzweil, who's one of the people behind Google. He wrote a book and has had a documentary made called The Transcendent Man, where he's spoken about the fact his absolute ambition is to get artificial intelligence to the point where he can transfer what he perceives as his being, right, all of his thoughts and his knowledge into an AI, and that AI will live forever. That will be his immortality. But there are other ways that our culture perceives and understands immortality. It's quite fascinating, actually. A movie called Highlander came out in the 80s. This is where I show my age a little bit. Anybody seen this movie? Okay. Chris is too young. Izzy's not interested at all. In this film, there was a chap called, the main character, Conor McLeod, grew up in Scotland in ancient times, and one day in battle, he got stabbed, and he died. And then, to the absolute bemusement of his fellow tribesmen, he came back to life. And it turned out that he was one of a group of people who are called the Immortals, who could not die unless, and pardon me for the all-age group of serfs, but unless his head was physically removed from his body. So unless that happened, they would be immortal. They would live forever. And the song, one of the songs for the soundtrack was done by Queen, the band Queen. It's a song, Who Wants to Live Forever? Because in this movie, this guy who'd live, he had a wife and family, and then his wives would die. And he would go on, and the same thing would happen. And it was incredibly tragic. And it would be tragic to continue to live that. And the question he was asked in the song, who wants to live forever? Would you want to live forever? There's another movie that came out. It's slightly more obscure, but slightly more current, Mr. Nobody. Chris, have you heard of this one?
No, that's too young.
What? Okay. So in this movie, it's a very clever movie, as current movies go. There's a chap who is a scientist who believes that there are more than three dimensions. There are actually six spatial dimensions. And that this means that life as we know it is not necessarily, a life that we see on the face of it is not necessarily all that there is. And he, in his research, comes to a point where he figures out how to constantly renew people's flesh so that when you come to the point of dying, you can have your flesh renewed and you can go on again. So you do not need to die. And he is the last person alive who is mortal. And he's the main character called Mr. Nobody. So everybody else from that point on will be immortal. Then there's another, a book by a chap called Julian Barnes. He writes in a book called The History of the World in 10.5 chapters. He writes a chapter which is on the idea of heaven. And has heaven been a place where you live forever and you always get everything that you want and you can't die? But he comes to the conclusion in this that this is not a valid idea of what heaven is, because it's just a constant kind of cycling of existence. And the problem with that kind of cycling of existence is Hindus would tell you that reincarnation, dying and reborn again, dying and being born again, is not a good thing. They see reincarnation as being trapped. You're trapped in an endless cycle of the physical from which you cannot escape. So there's something about mortality, as we know it, from which we need to be delivered. There's something that's not quite right. So what do we think of when we speak of resurrection? Here's some definitions of resurrection. To wake as from sleep, to rise from the dead, to live again, post-mortem, to depart from the grave, to be taken to God, to live forever, and to be glorified with him in his presence. These are concepts of resurrection, or definitions of resurrection. But there are some people, charismatic, heavily charismatic people, operating today, who would tell you that the literal interpretation of the statement, everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die, is applicable physically. A lady called Heidi Baker, is the right pronunciation. She operates in ministry in Mozambique and claims to have raised from the dead over 200 people. But I can't say for sure whether she has or not, because there are not many credible reports or accounts of these, on the behalf of these people, who she claims to have raised. There's another gentleman called Cobus van Rensburg, who was a minister in South Africa, who took the words of John's gospel and the words of Jesus, that I am the resurrection and the life, He who believes and lives in me shall never die. He believed that that should be taken literally, that we are lacking faith if we do not have a literal interpretation of these words, and we should be seeking to, in our faith, refuse to die. And he was sick. He was quite very, very sick. And he said, death is a choice. And he refused to die. And he brought a congregation along with him who all believed in him and believed that he would not die. What do you think happened? He died. I've got one more example. There's a church in America called Bethel Church. Some of you may have heard of it. They have a school of ministry called Fire School of Ministry. It's also called the School of the Supernatural. Part of that, the training for the young people at Bethel Church is they train people to raise from the dead. And they have a dead raising team. And these people in the screen are wearing shirts which said dead raiser. And they go around hospitals and funeral homes, and they seek to raise people from the dead. And there's a recent report where they refused to stop praying for a two-year-old who died to be resurrected, to the point where the mother of the child had to almost take a restraining order out on them to stop them from praying, because she was so devastated and distraught. That, because what does it do if we refuse to accept that we can't die? It prevents us from moving into a very real and very necessary cycle of life, which is grieving. Now, the words of Jesus are true. We know that the words of Jesus are true, so we have to figure out what it is that he's trying to communicate. The Old Testament original context of resurrection prior to Jesus coming, there were vague references. There were a couple of instances. Elisha raised people from the dead. There was also Ezekiel 37, where you think of the valley of the dry bones. There's a metaphor of being raised from the dead in that. But then there's also Daniel, where it specifically speaks of an eschatological future event where the dead will be raised, the people will be judged, the good will be saved, and the wicked will be judged and condemned. And into this understanding, Jesus comes. The Jewish understanding of burial and funeral rituals was that they had this concept of something called a fourth day man, where after 4 days, the soul would depart from the body. Prior to that, the soul would hover around the departed. But then on the fourth day, when corruption of the body set in the body, the soul would depart so that the soul would not be tainted by the corruption. Jesus comes into this situation, and we know from the signs of Jesus, and there are 7 signs of Jesus in the Gospel of John. I hope you can read from the screen. I'll read them from you. He turned water into wine. He healed the official's son. He made the lame walk. He feeds the multitude. He walks in water. He gives sight to the blind. And the final one is he raises Lazarus from the dead. Some say that his own resurrection is an 8th sign, but these are the specific 7 signs around which he teaches. He gives a doctrine, he gives a teaching, and then a demonstration, an actual physical demonstration of the teaching. And this 7th one, the raising of Lazarus, as with all the others, John says, these are written that we may believe, but they were performed that people would believe that he was who he says he was, that he was the one who was to come. And the interesting thing about this is the context, because he does it, it happens in a context of friendship and family. That just for those of you who like historical points of interest, there was an archaeological expedition carried out in 1873 where three ossuaries were found, which are boxes which contain bones, in a tomb in near Bethany, which had the names Mary, Martha, and Lazarus on them. So we can understand this in the sense of it happening with a very real family. And these were a family with whom Jesus was very, very close. The scripture makes it quite clear. These were people whom Jesus loved. They were very dear to him. Mary specifically mentioned as one who anoints him with perfume prior to his death. And it's peculiar because it makes his refusal to go when he hears that Lazarus is sick, it makes it very, very curious, because why would he refuse to go immediately to be with his friend who is sick and potentially dying? And Jesus says this illness does not lead to death, but Lazarus dies. The conversation that Jesus has with the disciples is equally confusing. He says, Lazarus is not dead. He's only sleeping. At first he says to them, Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I go to waken him up. But then because they think, okay, so he's only asleep, so that's fine, well, he'll just wake up. Then Jesus has to correct them and say, okay, no, Lazarus has died. So there's a confusion between Jesus' understanding of what's happened to Lazarus, who has died, and the disciples' understanding of what's happened to Lazarus, who's died. Jesus tries to tell them he's not dead, he's just sleeping. But they see him as being dead. So Jesus, as God, has a different view, a timeless and eternal view of existence, whereas we have a finite and a temporal view. Jesus is accommodating an eternal view for the sake of the understanding of his disciples. He knows exactly what is happening in this situation because he says, this sickness is not unto death, but it's for the glory of God, that the Son of God may be glorified through it. He knows exactly that this is happening so that he can commit and perform this sign of the resurrection so that faith will come. And let's be clear, on the face of it, resurrection is an absolutely unnatural act. It's not something which we are to take as being something which is a new normal. It's something which Jesus is performing because he's trying to communicate something about reality as it should be understood versus the reality as we perceive it. That makes sense. Death has entered the world. Death was never supposed to be in the world. But death has entered the world and it's changed everything. And it's changed the way that we understand life and death. And Jesus is seeking to change our perspective, to change our minds, to reform our minds so that we can have an eternal view. He also knows what this is going to mean to him personally, because him performing this act is going to directly lead to his crucifixion. So this is not him entering into an act where he's going to be lauded, celebrated, and held up as being somebody who should be venerated. This act makes him out to be somebody to be feared. And the religious leaders, immediately after the performing of the sign, set about planning to take his life and have him crucified. And Jesus understands all this, and he counts the cost, and he goes into it fully aware. The key phrase in the passage that I read is, Lazarus is dead. For your sake, I was glad I was not there, so that you may believe. And both of the sisters say to him in their interactions with him is that, Lord, if you had been here, he would not have died. One way of reading and understanding this passage is that Martha's interaction makes her out to be the one who has received the greater revelation. Okay? Because it's her to whom Jesus says the famous lines, I am the resurrection and the life. But one commentator, and I've been wrestling with this for the last couple of weeks, because I'm keenly aware that many of our congregants have lost people, and that this is a very, very real and a very pressing concern at this time. We have two sisters who, in their interaction with Jesus, reveal two ways of understanding what has happened and who Jesus is and how that affects, first of all, how we approach death, and secondly, how we mourn. Martha doesn't wait for him to come out before she goes to him. And in the narrative and in the story as it's told, this indicates that she is not fully aware of the fact that Jesus has fully come and is who he says he is, the one in whom there is life, the one who was at the very beginning when life was created, when God said, let there be light. She doesn't view him in that capacity. She views him as a prophet, someone who has come. She has a poor conception of who he is. And that's why Jesus has to speak to her and communicate these things to her. Martha, I am the resurrection and the life. Because she, in her interaction, she says, and this is key, I think. She says, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you. She's asking him to bring Lazarus back. It's a subtext, but she's asking him to do something about it. Right? But as I said, resurrection is not a natural act. So what she's asking for isn't really appropriate. Jesus knows who he is, and that's why his words, when he says, those who live in me and believe in me shall never die, reveal the fullness of the revelation. It's written this way by a chap called Godet. He says, every believer is in reality and forever sheltered from death by their union with Christ. To die with full light in the clear certainty of the life which is in Jesus. To die only to continue to live in him is no longer that fact which human language designates by the name of death. It is as though Jesus has said, in me, death is certain to live, and the living is certain never to die. Jesus, in coming in the flesh, takes death into himself, so that death then cannot have a conclusive impact on life, which is why the living is certain never to die. Mary, in her interaction with Jesus, and it's a very similar interaction, Mary goes to him and she says exactly the same thing. She says, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But she makes no further claim upon him. She simply grieves. She simply weeps. And Jesus does the same thing. He grieves and he weeps. Because Lazarus is dead. Lazarus has passed away from this earth. All of us will die. All of us will pass away. And when we do, it will be fitting to mourn and to grieve. The thing about resurrection, Lazarus was raised. They had more time with him. He passed away again. They would have mourned him again. To continue to think that we would be die and raised is to continue to bring the necessity of grief and mourning into life. It perpetuates the necessity for grief and mourning. I might not be explaining this very well, but the point of the resurrection, Lazarus being raised and then Jesus being raised, is to demonstrate that death has been defeated, that the original purpose of existence, of creation, was not for death to be a part. Because of our sin, death entered into the world, and Jesus coming into the world, take death into himself, to then be raised, has now absolutely altered that. Changed it, completely converted it, flipped it on its head, and reverted life back to the original intent of God, which is that death is the enemy which will eventually be destroyed. It's the last enemy to be destroyed, but it will be destroyed. Jesus said, "Did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God?" His word does not fall to the ground empty. We will see our loved ones again. The adversary has been overthrown, and with him the consequences of the rebellion. Death itself has been defeated, and so even in the moment of loss, we can speak to the enemy and let him know that he has no hold on those whom we love. We can speak the words that Jesus speaks. Take off the grave clothes and let them go, for we know that our loved ones live, even though they may have died. I don't want "rest in peace" written on my gravestone. I want written on my tombstone, "death had no hold on him." Death has no hold on us. It has no sting. But that doesn't mean that we don't mourn. Hebrews tells us it's given to us once to live and then to die and then to face the judgment. Why would we want to mourn twice for our friends and relatives as they keep coming back and then being taken from us? The one who held the keys to death and Hades has been defeated, and we can make the same pronouncement that Jesus makes to us. Unbind our loved ones and let them go. And we can have confidence that his word is true. And as it says in Job, "Even though he slay me, yet will I trust in him." Amen.